Coming to you from our studios in Dallas, Texas, and recorded live, Science News is on the air right now.
This is the promise of tomorrow, where people and industry keep up with the business of emerging and nanotechnologies. The fields covered in this series of programs will include energy, defense, aerospace, medicine, semiconductors, and more. For the next hour, Colonel Mason will introduce his experts, and you'll be on the cutting edge of the promise of tomorrow.
And welcome back once again. It's so good to be with you again. Exploring the exciting world of the business of emerging science, nanotechnology, open innovation. Those of you listening on radio can also hear us commercial-free online at thepromiseoftomorrow.biz. That's thepromiseoftomorrow.biz online, heard around the world. So it's really good to have you with us today. I want to remind you about the Global Humanitarian Technologies Conference going on October 21st through the 24th. In Seattle, Washington, at the Renaissance Seattle Hotel. It's going to be really good. Bring your solutions, engineering, science, technology, and a broad range, vital components urgently needed for the world's humanitarian survival. So lots of wonderful things going on there. A little bit later now, here after the science headlines, Keith Moore is going to stop by. He's the senior engineer at the United States Army Information Systems Engineering Command in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He's going to give a deeper view of the IEEE 2012 Global Humanitarian Technology Conference in Seattle, where he's a technical program chair. Actually, he's co-chair of the conference this year. He was technical program chair last year of the conference. A lot of neat things have gone on since that conference occurred last year, and you can learn more about it at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz. Just go to the right-hand side of the screen, and you'll see a link to the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference. And, of course, we're going to visit the Den of Strangers, get more wisdom from somebody a lot of us never heard of. We're going to visit our Fountain of Useless Information we have here on the set. That's coming up in the second half of the program. And, of course, at the end of the program, listener comments and the voice of reason. But right now, before we get over to Keith Moore and the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference information, we need to step into our world-class newsroom here. It's a very busy, noisy newsroom, and find out some of the news of the day that's going on. First, I see that a meteor came down, and you probably already know this. A meteor came down Sunday morning, April 22nd, over California and Nevada. It's called the Sutter's Mill meteorite, probably because it must have fell northeast of Sacramento. Anyway, there's a big search going on by the scientists of NASA and SETI to find the remnants of this meteorite, because they believe that the meteor is most likely to be related to molecules that could indicate extraterrestrial life exists. And they're looking for those of you who may have photos of this thing. It's blazed across the sky in a fireball at 7:51 to 7:52 in the morning, Sunday morning, April 22nd. And if you do, if you have photos, you know, from your cell phone or your surveillance cameras or anything else, please get a hold of NASA and SETI, because they're going to be very interested in what you have. So that's first in the news story here. And then next, we look at these news clips that our reporters hang up here, and here's some interesting stuff. Our correspondents, of course, from around the world are always reporting in on new ideas and things, and post here on the board, in the, our clipboard, and then we kind of pick them off and look for story ideas. And here's something from R&D Magazine. Now, how would you like to have a doorknob that knows whether to lock or unlock based on how we grasp it? Or how about a smartphone that silences itself if we hold up a finger to our lips? Or a chair that adjusts room lighting based on recognition if we lean forward or if we recline. Well, these reportedly here are among the many possible applications of a thing called Touché. That's according to this report, a new sensing technique developed by a team at, of all places, Disney Research, Pittsburgh, and Carnegie Mellon University. According to this story, touché is a form of capacitive touch sensing, the same principle underlying the types of touch screens that we use in most of our smartphones. But instead of sensing electrical signals at a single frequency, like the typical touch screen, touché monitors capacitive signals across a broad range of frequencies. It's called the SFCS for sweep frequency capacitive sensing. And according to this story in R&D magazine, it makes it possible to not only detect a touch event, but to recognize complex configurations of the hand or body that is doing the touching. An object, of course, could then sense how it's being touched, or might sense the body configuration of the person doing the touching. The sweep frequency capacitive sensing apparently is robust and can enhance everyday objects by using just a single sensing electrode. Sometimes, as in the case of a doorknob or other conductive objects, the object itself can serve as a sensor and no modifications are required, according to the story. Even the human body or a body of water can be a sensor. Ooh. We always wonder, the question comes up is, what's the fail-safe? I mean, what if you don't want to lock the door? And instead you do, and then you can't get it unlocked. And then you're like panicked because you're inside. But the touch doesn't work. I guess, these things are pretty sensational, but it's always kind of a concern to those of us on the street that we come up with these super things. What happens when all these machines become smarter than we are and don't respond in the way that we want them to respond? Well, I guess we'll have to see how scientists work that out. All right, let's go to our phones and let's see now if we can't connect with this morning's first guest. What do you say?
Stand by.
All right, right now on the line we have Keith Moore, senior engineer with the U.S. Army Information Systems Engineering Command at Fort Huaca, Arizona. I hope I'm pronouncing it correctly. We talked to Keith last year, and he told us about the things he was doing with the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference when he was a technical program chair. Now he's co-chair of the conference. Welcome to the program, Keith.
Thank you, Colonel.
Now, give us a good briefing. This is going to go on October 21st through the 24th, I understand, of this year, the Global Humanitarian Conference. And this is the second year, I believe, isn't it?
That's correct. We're going to hold it in Seattle this year again.
All right. And it was quite a success last year. Technology for the alleviation of humanitarian needs around the world. And give us a little recap of last year, if you wouldn't mind, and then let's get on to what's going on in 2012.
Sure, will do. Last year, it was a very successful conference. We were very pleased with it. For a first-year run, it was successful in every way. We had great attendance. We had great paper submittals. We had great speakers. It was just, I can't really even express how pleased I was with how it turned out last year. The program this year is going to mirror last year's for the most part. We've got a couple of new areas, but most of the areas are the same type of areas. All of those areas which support humanitarian efforts in the technology areas that support those, health, medical technology, telemedicine, disaster warning and disaster avoidance, response, water planning, availability and quality, sanitation, power infrastructure, off-grid, on-grid, renewable and sustainable energies, connectivity and communications, especially for remote locations and for health situations, educational technologies, agricultural technologies, and applying science engineering technology for all these things.
You're still looking for papers, I think, for people to submit for to make presentations at the event, or is that about ready to close out?
Yes, sir. We are still looking for them, so we've got a little bit more time to go. They may or may not extend it again, depending on what the response is and how much we've got at that point. And if we've got some folks that are still riding the fence, I'm sure they'll be a little lenient on that. And as long as you give us a good faith pre-read, that I'm sure they can look at it and tell you whether or not it's in the right lines or not, and then give you a little more time to get the full paper in.
All right. Those are all the areas that you're looking in: power infrastructure, disaster warning, sanitation, water planning. All the things that you just named are areas that you're interested in promoting for the global humanitarian technology solutions that are going to be coming up at the conference in Seattle, right?
That's correct. Yeah, really anything that supports the humanitarian effort. We've got a lot of folks that are out there working in various different avenues and locations, and they don't have a good ready assembling of the resource they need to get their job done. So this conference is an effort toward that direction to give people somewhere to come and say, well, how can I reach out and do my humanitarian mission better?
Well, these humanitarian needs around the world are operating in places where there is little or no infrastructure, and so I presume that energy has got to be a major part of that. Is that right?
Certainly. Last year, we had a number of papers that posed specific energy problems and solutions, and I expect it'll be the same this year. A number of off-grid power solutions ranging from solar to wind to water to other means of generating energy.
It's like all the other things that you're attempting to alleviate in the humanitarian crises around the world really demand energy. Even the refrigeration for keeping drugs cool for the Doctors Without Borders and those sorts of things. All that is part of it, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, energy is a great enabler. It certainly opens doors and creates utility that just is not there without it.
Now, have you partnered up with funding organizations? For instance, these companies that come and participate in the Global Humanitarian Conference, are they going to, is there ways of getting funds generated so that these commercial organizations will be able to operate in these far reaches of the world, or is this largely going to be charity stuff?
No, there certainly are sponsors and exhibitors that are there. We had a number of exhibitors that were at our conference last year, and we expect it to be the same this year. A number of sponsors that come and show up and listen to the various presentations and papers that are presented and decide on who they would like to fund. We have the World Bank there, representatives from there. We have various humanitarian organizations and non-governmental organizations who have donors and funds to allocate, and they're looking for the best bang for their buck. They're looking for where they can use their dollars to help folks.
So these are really some excellent business opportunities for those who want to attend the conference, or those who may want to exhibit or be part of the conference in some particular way, because there's a driving need for humanitarian solutions around the world. Isn't that the case?
That certainly is.
And what do you see as some of the highlights for this year? Are there some particular speakers or something you have in place so far that have been chosen that we can look forward to seeing?
This year we are planning to have probably a couple of speakers from NASA come in. NASA is, you might wonder, how does NASA play into humanitarian efforts? Well, NASA is very much in charge of much of the Earth observation efforts in the United States and across the world. They do work in conjunction with several other NASA-type organizations for other governments and other non-governmental organizations. So, and with the information that they glean, you can do a lot of things to help out humanitarian efforts with water location and water management, with crops and estimating crop output and helping farmers to know where to plant and things of that nature.
All right. And where do you see some of the most demanding needs? I guess in Africa, we're seeing things happening right now in the Sudan and other places like that are some cases pretty gruesome. Are there particular areas that you think are more important or more pressing than others?
Well, the sad news is that the oppression is available anywhere you look for it. It's something that we all have to deal with, and there are bad things happening no matter where you go. But the good news is we can help out with that. And if we work toward better ends, the best way that we in our conference support that is to help with communication and awareness. Helping provide those tools to help out in the immediate crisis is certainly part of our program, but we're definitely not planning on organizing a fighting force to go help out someone who is being oppressed, but we are helping those organizations who are trying to alleviate their suffering, helping those organizations who are trying to provide better ways to manage health needs in those situations and other situations that arise. And we are trying to provide tools so that those organizations can provide awareness for what's going on in the world.
Yeah, we see the world court in The Hague has just convicted Robert Taylor, and of course he is responsible for the maiming and the killing and the crippling of thousands and thousands of people in his part of Africa. And I suppose that's going to be one area that you're going to really be tuned to also, is that right?
Yeah, we certainly are in tune with what's going on there, and many of the technologies that we cover can help alleviate some of the suffering in those situations.
And you're back in Seattle again this year, so this is your second year now for Seattle. Is that going to be a permanent home for the conference?
It is not. Next year, we have put out a call for volunteer organizations within IEEE to host the conference somewhere else within Region 6, which is the western continental U.S., or not just continental, but also Alaska and Hawaii, the western United States. The conference is owned by Region 6, which is the western United States of IEEE, and so they would like to continue to hold it here for a short time at least. So next year we're accepting offers to host the conference, and we've got interest in Hawaii, we've got interest in San Francisco, and other locations as well. We have also had requests to hold conferences in Australia, in India, and other locations, and we're taking a different tack on some of those. What we're trying to work on is partnering with some of those conferences and doing a supporting conference where they hold their conference under the GHTC heading and title, but for a regional area, for their area, and then they feed some of their exceptional speakers, and we share some of our speakers and the papers with each other so that we can get some more collaboration across the international borders.
So next year, the conference could be held in Hawaii or Alaska or California or any number of different areas in your region. But you also may partner with a conference, let's say, in India or someplace, or Australia, someplace like that. Would that be in addition to what you might do with Region 6, or is that in tandem?
Yeah, that's in addition to what we're doing. I guess you could say it's partially in tandem as well, but it's a completely separate conference that is partnered with our conference and shares the same name and the same branding that we use for GHTC for IEEE. But we, instead of being the primary conference, the one in Region 6 for next year will remain the primary conference, and we have concrete plans being undergone right now to stand up a conference in India.
All right, so you're going to be keeping us informed on progress on those efforts, and of course on the things that you're doing in 2013, and of course as this conference develops for 2012, you're going to be keeping us up to date right along as new speakers are chosen and new papers are accepted and new people come aboard to make this even better than last year. Is that right?
Yeah, it certainly is. We're excited about the expansion there, and we're hopeful that it will continue to grow.
All right, Keith, what have we missed? What have I neglected to ask you concerning this particular conference that we want to be sure and cover today?
Well, registration is coming up sometime here in this month. The month of May, registration should open for early registration. So look on our website, IEEEGHTC.org, that's IEEEGHTC.org, for all of the information for the conference, really, but for the call for papers, for the registration, for our programs, for all the information you'd like to get on it, but especially for registration, then come out and join us.
Well, we need to mention, too, that there's also a link at our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, over in the right-hand side of the screen. They'll see the logo for the Global Humanitarian Technology Conference, the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference 2012. And those who are listening on radio can go to our website, promiseoftomorrow.biz, and they'll see right there on the right-hand side of the screen a link to your website, and there they can register for the conference. So there's a couple of ways it can be done.
Yep.
Now, what do we want to say in closing? Do you you have anything that you want to add before we get out of here?
In closing, sure. If you're out there and you're working on technologies you think could be applied to humanitarian efforts that could apply to some of those technology areas I mentioned earlier, please do get in touch with us. Please consider submitting your work to be evaluated. We are an IEEE technical conference, in many ways very, very like all other IEEE conferences. We are peer-reviewed, vetted, and published. So it's a good technology conference. So if you're working on these areas, please consider coming and working with us.
All right, one more thing, Keith, before we say goodbye. You're a senior engineer at the U.S. Army Information Systems Engineering Command, and I wonder if you might look, put on your meditation cap for just a minute and look into the future and give us a prediction of what do you see, either in the short term or the long term. Do you have a prediction for the future?
Well, let's see. In what venue?
You name it, I don't care. It could be sports, could be boxing, could be going to the moon, it could be science, it could be philosophy, technology, anything that you happen to have a vision for that you see going to happen somewhere down the line.
Well, the future is wide open. Anything is possible, and if we've got folks that are willing to put their differences aside and work together and work towards something good, there's practically no limits to what we can do.
All right, Keith Moore, senior engineer at the U.S. Army Information Systems Engineering Command, telling us about the IEEE Global Humanitarian Technology Conference 2012, October 21st through the 24th in Seattle and at the Renaissance Seattle Hotel. Thank you so much for being with us today and, as always, being very informative on the upcoming conference.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Now, I hope you'll stick around for the next half hour. It's going to be very exciting, as you probably know or may know, and certainly have heard reported in the science community, that on Sunday morning, April 22nd, at 7:51 to 7:52 in the morning, a fireball over California and Nevada was a meteor, several meters wide, and it created quite a stir. And NASA and SETI are looking for those of you who may have photographs of it. You had your camera out at the time, or maybe surveillance cameras picked it up, or any number of other things. They figure there's a bunch of pictures out there showing the course of this meteor. It's called the Sutter's Mill meteorite because big chunks of it fell northeast of Sacramento. Sacramento, California. And last week, there was a blimp search, a Zeppelin airship. The only working Zeppelin airship in the United States was flying over the area taking pictures, trying to find out the heat areas where this thing has landed. And the next half hour, we're going to have with us Peter Jeniskens. He's the lead scientist on this. And he's with SETI, S-E-T-I, working closely with NASA. Of course, SETI's been looking for years and years and years for trying to establish, extraterrestrial life. And they think that this meteorite could indicate extraterrestrial life exists because of molecules that are in it. And right now, what has been recovered is being sent away to labs, and we don't know the results of it yet. But anyway, he's going to tell us about that and why it is so important. The meteorite decomposes very quickly with moisture. And whether those molecules are related to life out there in space, but it's very hard to get samples of. So this is an important find, and they're looking for film, video. If you happen to have that of this fireball over Northern California and Nevada back Sunday morning, April 22nd, get a hold of NASA, because they're going to want to really talk to you, NASA and SETI, on this particular thing, and we're going to hear all about it in the next half hour. So stick around and join us back then. Okay, as we walk to the break at the half hour, we're going to pause at the door of the Den of Strangers, where we keep locked away all of the wisdom of mankind. In the Den of Strangers, will we meet today?
Prime Minister Winston Churchill.
I have never promised anything but blood, tears, toil, and sweat. Never in the field of human conflict was so much owed by so many to so few.
We will never parley.
We will never negotiate with Hitler or any of his gang. We shall fight him by land. We shall fight him by sea. We shall fight him in the air until, with God's help, we have rid the earth of his shadow and liberated its people from his yoke.